This is A Lost Plot, the podcast where we explore meaning in movies together.
Hello, everyone. Just a quick update. We're having a little giveaway going on at our Instagram page. Go ahead and check that out. Why are we having a giveaway? Because it is the second anniversary of A Lost Plot. So go over there, check out the details. We hope to see you there. Thank you for supporting us this entire time. We really appreciate it, but we're getting back to the show because that's why you're here. Hello, universe. Welcome back. It is your boy with another episode of A Lost Plot. As always, I'm your host, Maverick, and today we have back our absolute classic legendary co-host bringing it back for us today. Hello, Avalon.
Hello, hola, konnichiwa, and leho.
Now, today, we are going over a classic, let's say, but a little bit of a unique classic. Today, we are dealing with the movie, which you saw in the title. This is no surprise to anyone who's watching this because we put the movie in the title. Anyways, Ghostbusters, 1984 release. It is a horror/comedy, according to the internet. Which was written by Dan Aykroyd. Excuse me. Not as familiar with these older guys. Harold Ramis, directed by Ivan Reitman, starring Bill Murray as Peter Venkman, Dan Aykroyd as Ray Stantz, Sigourney Weaver as Dana Barrett, and Harold Ramis as Egon Spengler, and etc. But as always, before we get into the rating and everything that goes with this podcast, Avalon, please tell us, what is Ghostbusters about?
So Ghostbusters follows a group of scientists who deal with like the paranormal. Like they study like all this like supernatural stuff that goes on, and they make a breakthrough and figure out how to capture and anchor ghosts in reality. Mm-hmm. And so they decide to start a business where they're hunting ghosts and capturing them for people. So, nice.
Yep.
Essentially, that's the whole plot. And as they're doing this business, they come across some conspiracy, I guess you could say, like something that's going on. Like some events are unfolding to bring back some ancient god to New York.
Right. So, dealing with the paranormal world. So, yeah. Now, based on the 9-point rating system, Avalon, what did you give this movie?
So, this is one of those times where I rated a movie, and then when I looked at the score, I was like, I don't like that. This is like, it was one of those things where I was like, I like this movie, so I don't actually like this score. Somehow I ended up with a 4.5. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I guess it's middle of the road, but it's like, I don't like that.
Yeah, this one was interesting. So as a background to you, audience, we were originally supposed to record this podcast yesterday, and after I had never seen Ghostbusters before, as a background for people. Although, you know, it's relatively familiar in the cultural zeitgeist. One of the great things about this podcast is it's an excuse to watch classics. So here we are. But I watched this, and it was one of those times where I watched a movie and it made me think a lot about how the rating system works, how all of these elements are put into place. So that being said, I had to push back the recording a whole day just to figure out how to deal with this movie. Is it something that garners a whole new revision to the podcast system, right? And I think that at the end of the day, this is going to be a test run, let's just say that. So as a background, I will give you my rating and then I will explain a little bit. My rating for this movie was a 2.47. So pretty low. But I will say a couple of things. One, what I am going off of is a revised version of the 9-point rating system. So if you look at this, I have a new sheet of paper, and this sheet of paper has different questions on it than what Avalon went off of. So it'll be interesting to see if this garners Not intentionally. And then when I thought about it, I was like, well, I don't want to delay the podcast any further, so we'll just get into it, and then we'll see if this leads to interesting discussion. But yeah, hopefully that will be revised online if you want to check that out on the website soon. Those should be up pretty quickly for you who are listening. The other thing about this is that whenever it comes to comedies in movies, right, the intent of a comedy is very different from the intent of a thriller, an action movie, a romance, even to a certain degree, because the intent of comedy is in some ways to bring about humorous interactions more than anything else, right? The theme or the value of the movie comes from that, versus a lesson to be learned and a story to be told and a person to change throughout that is not so much the goal of a movie. So this is one of the reasons why I don't generally try to do comedies, because I'll have to think about this more, but there might even be a sense in which a comedy might get its own rating system just because of how different it is. I'm not fully there yet. I'm not convinced of that or what that even would look like, because comedy is outside of my spectrum of, I'm an expert at any of this, but it's more outside of my knowledge base than any of the other types of stories, right? So This is an attempt, this is a stab at that effort, and we'll hopefully have a good discussion regardless. And another thing to note is that Dan Aykroyd, when he wrote this originally, it was given a very serious tone. It wasn't originally written as a comedy, and in fact, it was written more as a space-esque horror type in the future at some point. And then both the director Reitman and the co-writer Ramis brought it back down to reality in some ways and put it in the modern setting that it got. So I think that's important to note in that. And there was some attempt based on the reading I did afterwards to ground this in a balance between the funny and the serious. So at the very least, the intent was there to have it have that bent. All that to say is, because of how it was written and the structure of it, I think I'm willing to go into this and not say this is a full-fledged comedy like other stories out there. This is might be something within our wheelhouse, and we're going to give it a shot. Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
All right, cool. I don't know if you have anything to say on that. I know that in just discussions with you before the recording, you had some misgivings about this specifically compared to other movies and how the rating system works.
Well, I mean, because there is something to be said where it's like, I think a discussion could be, because let's face it, this movie didn't just come out yesterday. This movie came out like decades ago during the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, this movie is still around. And so there's an aspect, even though I gave it a 4.5 like point rating, there's a part of me that's like, well, hang on. Like, this movie has already proven to have longevity. Like, even though this story-wise isn't as strong as some other movies, maybe a discussion needs to be had about cult classics and about what is the appeal of a certain type of movie. Why does it have this staying power? Why does it retain its presence in the current setting, in the current cultural, zeitgeist, or the, you know.
right. Yeah, what about this movie? At the very least, you can't deny that they've made four or five movies almost at this point off of this one movie. And it's
three sequels and one remake.
So it's clearly got some level of cultural relevance, and it added something to the, I guess, cultural zeitgeist that we didn't have before. So I think there is something to be said about that. The question, obviously, this, to ground it back to this podcast is all about the storyline specifically of movies. So we're not talking about whether or not it has great visual effects, whether or not it, although that can affect the story somewhat, it's not a significant contributing factor, and that should be seen in how the storyline is outlined. So all of that to say, I do think there is something to be said about that, and I did add some element of that to the new rating system, but I'm not even sure or convinced that that will continue to be a part, and maybe we can have a discussion on how much that should be weighted. But anyway, let's get into it. So the opening scene, you have these characters introduced as the, what did they even call themselves? Psycho, paranormal, whatever, like as a treating basically investigating ghosts as a legitimate form of a scientific exploration. And then they lose their jobs. And in the middle of that, they also investigate a ghost at a library. And that pretty much kicks the movie, right? What did you think of that as an opening scene?
So, I mean, I personally, I kind of, like, I thought it was, like, mid-tier opening, kind of. Only because you had some interesting things happening, like a normal library. And then you see, like, these supernatural things happening. And then it's, like, you see that, okay, this isn't normal. There's spooky stuff going on. And then you have these scientists introduced. And also another thing about the scientists in this movie, I didn't fully remember this from last time, but this is one of those few times where they actually throw around so much scientific jargon, it's actually hard to follow. Like, because there's movies that pretend to throw scientific jargon around, and it's like, oh, you can follow it, though. And then it's just like, this is one of those times you're watching, like, oh, wait, they're actually using, like, all this stuff. It's hard to follow sometimes.
I think you're right, actually. I mean, I don't think it affects my rating, but I think you're right. Because what I noted on it was I didn't think there was that much, I don't think that there was that much explanation for the technological aspects that were different in this universe. But now that you mention it, they did at least put a lot of quote-unquote scientific jargon in there. Whether or not it's accurate or not, obviously doubtful. Scientific, a sci-fi world, but it was good world building for sure, and I think that they were still functionally accurate. But okay, that's interesting. No, I thought the opener was pretty good, and I was just thinking about this because a lot of times I actually rate the openings pretty high. Usually out of the 5 points or the half a point that they can get on this, they get almost the whole half point in most situations. In this case, they did. It's like it's fun loving. It sets the tone for the characters. It sets the tone for the movie. Everything about the opener is what you want to see in an opener. And the reason that this is still important is because there are a lot of different storylines. And you see this more in novels than necessarily in movies, but where the main introduction takes a very long time to make some very simple points or to establish characters, that really is excessive in some degree. So that's where you really have, okay, this is not necessary, or they lack some significant point or something like that. Most of the movies we've reviewed so far have done pretty good on that, so I've not been too upset. And this is the case here. Like, this one actually had a pretty solid opener. I enjoyed it. Obviously, you did to a certain degree, too. I thought the part with the ghost in the library was hilarious, and it set the tone for each of the characters, right? You've got the scientist guy who is always holding out his little buzzer machine to see if there's ghosts around. You have the other guy who's always scared. You have Bill Murray's character, who's kind of nonchalant about these things, which is really odd considering the ghosts themselves, right? And how most people would be afraid of the paranormal. He kind of takes it all in stride. So it sets the characters off well. It sets off the movie well. I think in regards to an opener, it was pretty solid. Now, the main character. Is the main character flawed in a compelling way, or is there something missing from the main character's life which they need to be made quote unquote whole?
I would say they're flawed. I mean, they're definitely not like perfect people. I mean, because you have the two guys, two of the scientists, they're definitely socially awkward to like a huge extent. Like, they can't interact very well with people outside of their expertise. And so, like, and it shows very painfully sometimes. Bill Murray's character is perhaps a little bit more socially like adjusted.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like he's clearly got some like sleazy ideas and stuff going on in his head and other things. So it's like, okay, he's not a perfect person either. He's
No, I'd agree. I didn't give them a ton of points. So here's the first thing I would say is, even though this is a team up movie, Bill Murray's character of Peter Venkman is clearly the main character compared to the others in this story. He gets the most screen time. He has the most character development. He has the most stuff going on with him. He's clearly, of all of them, the more primary character. So I put him as the main character. The other ones are very strong side characters, but I don't know that because you always have a team up movie that everyone's the main character. And I think in some ways that can detract from the movie. I think Peter Venkman was the right choice as the main character in, well, maybe not actually. I'll have to think about that, but he was in my mind the main character, and I think as a main character he was flawed, but his flaws didn't really play into anything, so it didn't give the strongest
points. I could see that, yeah.
Other than he was, like you said, the sleazy guy that, you know, he.
Well, I guess in a way, like a lady, human character.
It. Yeah, he is human. And I guess that's true. Yeah. So you get the humanity of Peter. Yeah. It's weird, right? Like, this movie is weird. And this is why we're even, you're seeing me kind of think back and forth as we're having this discussion, even though I've had all this time to think about this review, because it's kind of an odd movie, right? And I don't personally, I don't personally think there's actually a lot going for this movie other than a couple strong scenes. And I think that those strong scenes are really what makes this a cult classic, which we'll get to. But the characters, I felt like, were very stock in some ways. And Peter Venkman was an interesting character, but he was, when you think of a sleazy guy who's just out to get some, and that's it. That's him. And so, you know, he's, I don't know. I didn't really feel like there was, I didn't hate his character. I just didn't think his character was that compelling as I don't care exactly what happens to him. And maybe that plays more into the other points. So maybe we should get to those as well. But I don't know if you have a rebuff to me, even as I'm saying,
not really. I mean, like, he is a, I mean, mostly when I was thinking of these flawed characters, I was thinking of them in terms of human terms, like they weren't like completely cardboard cutouts. Like, there you could see like some fleshed out, but I could also see what you're saying. Like, they were kind of stock. Like, some characters were kind of stock characters for this movie. Like, you didn't get like a whole lot of character development for them. Yeah, but it's clearly what, yeah, I don't really have a whole lot more to say about the characters. Like, they're, some of them are stock. Some of them have more humanity to them, but they aren't like hugely unique characters, I guess.
Yeah. It is interesting to have that discussion, right? I've been in discussions before. I recall one time where I was in a class and we were discussing, what's the Treasure Island, with Long John Silver and all those. Right. And one of the questions that the teacher asked in that class was, is Long John Silver a stock pirate? Is he the stereotypical pirate that everyone thinks of? And all of the girls in the class said yes, and all of the guys in the class said no. And so it was interesting to see just how that played out, because our perceptions of how these characters are can play very strongly into what we think of the whole story and what we think of the stereotypes of those characters and things like that. So, yeah, anyways, I don't want to belabor that point too much. I just thought it was interesting. Let me pull out my little sheet here. Where are we? Main characters, side characters. What do you think of the side characters?
I mean, we kind of already discussed this a little bit already, but I mean, some of them are stock. Some of them, I mean, it's hard to say. Like, some of the characters, like, what's her name?
Talk about Dana? Janine?
Yeah, Dana. I was thinking about Dana. Like, she's, I mean, she wasn't, like, hugely unique. And I guess maybe I'm just thinking, like, if she's unique, she's kind of falls into the, like, typical 80s movie, like, female character. So it's like, she really doesn't feel all that, like, unique as a character in this movie.
Yeah, big hair and everything. Yeah.
And then, like, yeah, Winston Zeddemore, I can't think of anything that would make him stand out as a character, as the fourth member of the Ghostbusters. Like, the only character who maybe had something maybe going for him was Rick Moranis' character, Louise, the neighbor down the hall.
Yeah, he was very interesting, that's true. Very developed. Yeah. Apparently, so when I was reading, apparently the guy who played him ad-libbed several portions of his character's lines and helped add a lot to his character, like he's an accountant and all these kinds of things. But interesting. So I think the threshold for the side characters is definitely lower than the main characters in that what do you have, why are you compelled to be? I think the big thing for me is, are you compelled to be involved in this situation for different reasons than the main character? That's the main thing I think of when I think of side characters. And that's important because that's where you get those more dynamic, nuanced interactions where one person who would normally be on your side might turn against you because they have a different reason for being there than you do, and your goals no longer align. So that's what I think of is, can you provide those opportunities for that unique interaction with the characters in the story? And I think that as a whole, sorry, that was a little bit of a tangent there, but I think the point is that side characters, I have less of a threshold maybe for what I expect of them compared to the main character. And that's why, is the main character flawed? Yes, no, we can debate that. But the side characters, I would say overall, were pretty compelling. I thought that Dana, even though she is in some ways stock, she's not just going to go with them to, or, you know, be Peter's lover or anything like that, right? She has her own motivation. She wants to get rid of the ghosts in her house, right? And then whatever his name is, Lewis, I think, the dude down the stair, next door or whatever, is like, he's got his own motivations for sure. And, you know, Janine has her own motivations as the secretary. Even to some degree, I thought that Winston's character had some, or Winston as a character had some of his own motivations. So I didn't think that they were terrible. I didn't think they were amazing characters, but I definitely thought they were more developed in some ways than other characters in the story. So I gave it pretty high points overall. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, we talked about the world. We talked about the characters. We talked about the universe. We're going to move on. Is there a compelling motive for the protagonist to be involved in the plot? Do they have motive and or reason?
Well, I guess Bankman kind of does, because he wants to prove to Dana that he's legit, so he's going to take care of her ghost problem. So in a way, he gets involved because he wants to prove himself to her in a weird way, but
yeah.
But he also, I think, doesn't fully realize when he first gets into it how bad the situation is and how dangerous it's going to get. I think it's like that comes out much later in the movie, but he gets involved. He's like, oh, I'm going to prove myself. His associates are only interested because this is what they study, like, more or less. They're not like they're scientists who study the supernatural, and this is like an extension of their studying and their goals as scientists. So I guess that they have some reason for getting involved in everything, but it's like there's not no reason, but it, I don't know. It's not a very strong reason, I guess, maybe.
Yeah.
I guess at the end of the day, it's like for them to risk their lives over this seems a little absurd, but
it's part of the point of the movie, right? Where these characters are involved in this situation. The whole situation in and of itself is a little absurd. These characters are trying to catch ghosts, but at the same time, the ghosts are wrecking havoc. And this guy who's the head of the team really doesn't care that much. He just wants to, you know, get this chick to fall in love with him. So it's a little bit silly, and that's part of the intent. So it's the fact that their motive, that Peter specifically, his motive is not that strong for being involved, is kind of part of the bit, which is why I think that maybe I would put something like this in a separate category normally.
Okay.
But yeah, because I, but that being said, I gave it, I didn't give it like worst points on this part. Like I gave it a little below middle of the road on this one. So, yeah. What do you think about the villain? Is the villain or obstacle in the way of the main character compelling? Do they have, and the thing that I added to this question, which I think might be helpful just for your purposes, is do they cause protagonists to fear and make the goal uncertain and reconsider their path, right?
Well,
so for you as an audience, right, we're looking for obstacles or villains, things that get in the way of the protagonist to cause them to doubt, to cause them to fear, to cause them to dread what's going to occur, right? These are all, we're all trying to get the protagonist to have some sort of terrified or fearful emotion regarding the situation. And because if we have buy-in to the main character, we too will also have that same emotion inside of us if we're truly engaged with the characters. So that's the idea behind adding this to the question. Anyways, go ahead, Avalon.
I'm thinking this through, partly because of what you just said, but also because I just realized, because when I first answered this question, I was just thinking in terms of Gozer, like the god, the idol god they're bringing back. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I just realized when you said obstacle, like, wait a minute, there's another character who's kind of an obstacle in this movie. What's his name? He's
the EPA.
Walter Peck, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mr. Peck. Yeah, that's right. Because like he, like, because he's like from the government, like he's like kind of trying to shut them down. It's like regulate them more or less.
Yeah.
And he's blaming all these like ghostly stuff on them as like falsehoods in like a light show. So like he's kind of an obstacle, but it's also like he's there for comedic effect more or less, and he's just there to further the plot. So I mean, he as a villain isn't really like developed.
That's so funny that you take that away. That's so interesting.
He seems a little out of his depth, and he's just like making demands at certain points in the movie that don't make a whole lot of sense. If he's not an expert, he doesn't know what these things are. He's just demanding they shut it down and these devices down and everything, and it's just like, okay, like I don't know if this is logical or reasonable. Like you aren't giving very much reason for why they should shut this down.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's almost like his character was irrational, but I mean, it is like, yeah, as I said, it's just to further the plot and get the ghosts released at that certain point in the movie from their vault.
Yeah,
to create havoc and chaos.
I see. Okay, I see what you're saying there. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and after that happens, he kind of loses his power in the movie. It's not like he has much of a sway. Not really.
Right.
So yeah, and then as far as Gozer goes, like, supposedly, yes, they have the power and means of stopping the heroes, and, like the Ghostbusters and such. But it's also like, I mean, the threat is there, but it's more like a situation where we're told, not shown. Like, we're not really given an example in the movie of the power of Gozer in this movie. It's just like, okay, like, how they could stop the Ghostbusters. What, like, there's never, like, a scene where they fail against Gozer, I guess.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, as you said, this is a comedy. So I guess this is one of those situations, like, would you really have that kind of situation in a comedy? I don't know.
It's true, right? Like, what is the primary intent of the movie? In this case, I think it is for comedic effect, which makes it a little bit harder. But the villain is very stock. Everyone knows you're going to defeat Gozer. The EPA guy I actually thought was more interesting than the primary villain. But yeah, I guess you could say that his only intent or purpose was to cause the escape of all the monsters that ends up leading to... What does it even exactly lead to the opening of the portal for Gozer to arrive? But it's, yeah, interesting. I think that everything about it indicates that the villain was not a compelling villain in that everyone knows he's going to be defeated in the end. The main character, Peter, isn't really bothered almost ever when he sees a monster or a ghost. When they're going inside of the tower to fight them, they have a whole crowd cheering them on like they're football stars or something like that. Like it's kind of silly when, okay, if there is this apocalyptic thing occurring, You would have people running in the streets. You might have a couple of people standing by who, out of morbid curiosity, want to watch. But for the large portion, you're not going to have people safely looking outside, on the sidelines, seeing what's going to occur. So the fact that that was occurring in this movie was an indictment on the villain, if anything. I think, once again, like you said, it's kind of the point is that it's more of a comedic piece, and the fact, and you see this especially in the climax of the movie, so we'll get to that. But is there a theme in this movie, and are the ideas of this theme discussed or developed as the story progresses?
Not really. I mean, you could kind of make the argument that because they're so against ghosts and against, like, death, I guess, like, trying to establish, like, because ghosts, whenever they show up, they cause chaos. They cause, like, destruction. And so it's like they're kind of trying to bring order out of chaos and kind of trying to bring a sense of unity and order, like almost like a policeman or something to a mob or something. Like, they're just trying to, like, quell a situation every time they show up. So it's like, I guess you could arguably say it's like a situation of, like, order versus chaos, maybe, but it's a very light ideal, a very light ideal conflict or representation in this movie.
I put down, like, some cheesy point about love might be the message of the story, but I really don't believe that. That was me trying to spitball something at it. You know, I don't.
Yeah,
I do think you're grasping at straws, and I don't know if this is one point that I don't think would necessarily change regardless. I do think that even comedic stories can have a message and can have a theme that they're trying to convey. And if there's not one, I think that's an indictment of the story as a whole. Because part of the thing is, at the very least, if you have a theme, you're forcing yourself to have some level of cohesion to the story. And when you don't, sometimes things just go in all different directions. And in certain degrees, I think you don't see that fully in the story, but you see it to a certain degree where the romance, at least to me, feels fairly disattached from the rest of the story as a whole. Anyways, heightened tension. Do you believe that the protagonist is thrown from a good situation to a worse situation with losses that cannot be reversed? Or does the protagonist achieve all only to realize the cost and outcome was worse than they believed?
No.
Yeah.
It's a comedy. There's not very many stakes, not really, for the main characters, aside from Dana.
Yeah.
I guess Louise too, but no one really cares about Louise in this movie.
Yeah, he has a lot at stake. He's really, really trying to get that girl. That's funny. All right, so moving forward from that, does the protagonist experience world-shattering loss, which causes them to despair?
No. I mean, that's an interesting question, but I've never, like, that doesn't happen in this movie, so.
No, and I think that, like, this is to point, like, beyond just are things getting worse and worse and worse, is something that's really valuable to the character lost in the storyline that we're discussing at hand. And if something truly is at stake and they do actually have to make a sacrifice, that should be seen in the story. So that's why this question was added. If you like it, let us know. If you don't, leave it in the review below. Oh my goodness. Oh, the cheesy plug.
Like and subscribe.
Okay, yeah, now that I've done
follow
that.
Follow us on the socials.
It's so weird, dude. I don't even know. But please like and subscribe. Okay, anyways, moving on. There was a revelation in this movie that changed everything. Did that happen? Did a revelation occur in this movie that changed everything?
Not in the way you probably think. But as I said, it's not very strong. I mean, it's so, like, at the later end of the movie, because they're looking into the whole, like, Zool thing throughout the first part of the movie, and they don't really come up with much for it until this one point towards the end when he's like, the apartment building she's in is built specifically to channel, like, spiritual energy or something. So it's like, it's almost like an antenna, like, channeling, like, the spiritual presence of things, like ghosts and whatever, into a specific area. So it's almost like creating a potential gateway to like the like spiritual domain so Gozer can come back. And it's like the architect was like a cult leader or something, so it's almost all like all these things. Was like, so it's kind of all this is revealed at one point, so it's kind of supposed to be this big revelation, like why her apartment is haunted. Which yeah. makes sense. It's actually an explanation, to give it credit, for why she's why this has been happening to her this whole movie.
Right. Her specifically. Yeah.
But other than that, it's like it's not really like earth shattering, like, oh, like plot twist, like, oh, this is like so I mean it's right. a revelation that does change a lot for the movie. But it doesn't, like, it's not presented like, oh, like, shocker.
Right, exactly. And that's one of those things, I say this every time, but I'll say it again. This is the question that's supposed to be, if this is the best movies fulfill this question specifically, right? Can you set up expectations well, and then at the same time subvert them, upend them in a way that's still cohesive with the storyline? If you can't, no big deal, because the best stories, sometimes the best stories don't do that. But oftentimes, the very best stories do. Come at me, Lord of the Rings, some of the other movies out there, The Sixth Sense, the Luke, I Am Your Father from Star Wars. Come on, let's go. Anyways, was there a knockout surprise ending or climax ending to this movie?
I mean, in this case, not really. Not really.
That being said, it was interesting, and I do want to highlight this section because maybe I'll wait. No, never mind. We'll wait till the very end, because I think that this kind of goes, I think that discussing this will lead into the broader discussion point that you want to get to. So let's just get through the narrative, and then we'll discuss whether or not the overall cultural relevance of the story, if that sounds good to you.
Okay, yeah.
Cool. The main character, do they change as a person? Are they better or worse off morally, spiritually, etc., for having gone through this situation? Do they change?
I mean, maybe Peter Venkman changes a little bit, like where it's like he is willing, like, because he's like going after Dana this whole movie. So it's almost like at the end, he's less sleazy, maybe, and more like, I'm committed to her, maybe. But that's a very weak, like, as a whole, all these characters, they don't really change from the first second of the movie to the final second. It's kind of they're static. They kind of stay the same. They're still the same scientists who started this whole business at the beginning of the movie. They end it the same way.
I would agree, and I think that's probably, for me as a critic, I think this is probably one of the bigger things, because I think we do go to these movies to experience a story and then to hear the story of change. And I think that all of us are constantly changing throughout our lives, looking to change for the better, hopefully. And this is where you get any level of inspiration or motivation or some sort of grand narrative that in some way inspires us as individuals as we go out into the world. And I don't know that I see that in this movie, and that's probably the bigger thing to me, is that even if it's a action-packed movie, you want to see characters that learn, that grow, because that's how that is one of the big ways I think that we relate to these characters, is through seeing their transformation. Yeah, you might be Iron Man who's got these super-powered tech, but at the end of the day, you're also a human who's learning to restrain your emotions, to go off of, stop focusing on money and pleasure, and focus on doing what's right for the world around you, right? And there's things like that that we look at and we go, wow, that's really what I should be doing. Even if you're not consciously thinking that, at the same time, you can look and go, that's an awesome movie. And part of the reason you can say that is because of the narrative that's produced. And part of the way that narrative is produced is you see someone who's a human who changes, who becomes a better person. And I'd say most stories have that narrative beyond just external conflict. They have internal conflict as well. So, the fact that they don't have this in this movie makes me go, I don't know. But, you know, of course, I gave it a 2.47. You gave it a 4.5, and you weren't even happy with 4.5. So we're about to get to that. Stay tuned, people. Does the movie have a message that needs to be conveyed that can be drawn? This one was written weird. My apologies, everybody. Let me look at my question and then state it. Does the movie have a message that is conveyed that can be drawn from the development of the theme and the arc of the characters? Basically, like, is there a theme? What is the theme? And did we see, as we asked earlier about the themes, did we see that theme play out?
Yeah. I mean, it's as we discussed the ideals earlier on, there might be a theme. Like, I'm hesitant to say there's no theme because there is, like, some clear, like, as I said, there's, like, chaos and order going on. So mm-hmm. maybe there's very light themes going on. So, and maybe that's what it is. Like, even though this is a comedy in a sense, like this is an older comedy movie per se, it's not like the movie has no complete substance. Like, there's clear lines drawn between like the ghosts and the Ghostbusters, like what they kind of represent each. I mean, and maybe that's why there's like maybe some more longevity to this movie compared to other comedies. I don't know. And maybe it's just because it's like the ideas and symbols shown in this movie. It's like it's a little bit of a unique combination where it's like you have these dark elements of ghosts and the paranormal, but then you also have like hunt, like I think this movie like kickstarted a whole genre of like the whole idea of hunting for ghosts. Like, I don't know if that if this movie didn't exist, would we have things like Luigi's Mansion today, or like varied like ghost hunter shows you see of like paranormal investigators? Like, would those exist without Ghostbusters? I don't actually know. Like, maybe they'd exist in a different form. I don't know. Like, it brought and also like it just presented things in a completely different light than what we're used to.
Right.
So yeah, like just looking at this movie as far as themes and such goes, like it's hard for me to say there's none. And like I'm trying to think about this. I feel like there's something, but it's buried. It's like it's not very strong. It's almost like taking a like putting a sheen like on a car or something, like adding like something like just like a thin layer of something on top of something else. Like, so it's like barely there. I don't know.
I think you might have something there. I'm gonna at this point not acknowledge it in my review until we get to the last question. But I do think that that you might have something there. I think you might have something there. I didn't put down that they had a theme or a message in this story, but you could prove me wrong in just a second. But before we get to that, one last question. Does the final image of the story leave you satisfied and reflect the character's journey?
I mean, I was satisfied with this movie. I'm just going to say that right now. I mean, but that's the other thing. Like, this movie doesn't fit the norms of what we discuss on this podcast for the most part. It's like, it's a comedy. So there's a lot of things that goes out of our, like, what we normally watch. Like, not what we normally watch, but what we normally review. So.
Right. And maybe this will be the litmus test.
I was happy with what I got out of this movie just because I was expecting more comedy, more of a fun, there's like some fun comedic romp through ghosts and the paranormal. Somewhat dark comedy in some regards. And even then it wasn't that dark, so.
I wouldn't say it was that dark at all.
Except for maybe like, the possession scene.
That's exactly what I was about to say. That's like. Even that was. Something else that was pretty funny. I gave this like middle of the road as well. I think that they did show the beginning versus the end. They at least started the business and are surviving, and he gets the girl and all that stuff. So it does reflect that. And once again, the intent of the movie. So what is the intent of a comedy? There is nothing like profound or uniquely intriguing about how the ending went, right? There is no top spinning like Inception where, what does that even mean? Are they actually in the real world or not? You know, nothing like that. We're given just the classic and exit, right? Mm-hmm. Happy ending. So it was fine. It was interesting. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It was like, whatever. So the real question is I added a new almost category. I kind of tagged it to the last one, but I called this question the wow factor or the X factor, something out seen outside the story that adds value and makes it transcend its present moment. Often seen in cult classics or highly acclaimed movies. Now, I will tell you, I only gave this question a quarter of a point. So it's not going to like add huge points to this, to the rating system if we choose to add this, but I thought we'd trial run it here.
Okay.
In regards to that, do you say that yes, no, somewhat to this movie?
I would say yes. Like only because this, I mean, as I kind of said a few minutes ago, like this movie doesn't, like it's a comedy, it's a horror comedy, but it's also like it plays with ideas in a comedic fashion that I don't, what the heck?
I didn't do that. We've had this discussion. I don't know how that, I need to contact these people. I don't know how they,
what?
It is so funny when it shows up though, because it's just,
oh, that was like perfect like, timing. Like you were just agreeing with me visually.
Like, I don't know how it happens. It's like so borderline concerning. Like for you who are listening, a thumbs down bubble showed up on my screen. So it was like hating what he just said. It's so weird. I don't know what's going on with this software. It's like I've looked at every setting on here. And there's no settings that have to do with random bubbles showing up. Not that I know of.
Oh, man.
Unless there is. I don't think so, though. Anyways, sorry. Keep going. You are perfectly fine.
Dang it. After I retraced my line of thought, that just completely took me out of the moment for a moment. I was just like, what?
I was really
that?
Hoping it would, but then you just, like, the look on your face, I'm like, all right, we're done. We're done for. It's like,
yeah, I mean, there are definitely movies where it's like they play with concepts, and maybe that's what it is with a cult classic or something, where it's like especially ones that are more prominent in the cultural mindset, I guess. Like you see something like, say, Princess Bride, which is a cult classic, I guess.
That's a good comparison, I'd say.
So it's like that one isn't like, I mean, it's got a decent story. It's not a bad story. And we haven't reviewed Princess Bride on this podcast, but I would say that the movie itself is solid in some regards, but I wouldn't say it's an amazing story. Like it's a pretty basic storyline.
Yeah.
But it does things in fun ways. And like it takes certain characters and certain ideas and like has fun with it in a way that perhaps other adventure movies at the time didn't exactly do. So I don't know. Like I just like thinking about it. Like think about this for the first time now, like they're I think maybe cult classics, they just take ideas in the moment and just run with them in a new direction, perhaps. Not so much I'd say Ghostbusters does. They take these ghosts, like what should be scary, and makes it funny instead. Like it takes it plays a reversal, like a Uno reverse on things.
What am I doing? I am reviewing. I am seeing what the definition of cult classic is. because I just wanted to confirm that I was on the right category. It didn't actually answer any of my questions. It was exactly what I thought it was. And that being that, whatever, I might as well just read it since I looked it up. Something, typically a movie or book, that is popular or fashionable among a particular group or section of society, right? And so you have these stories, these movies that get this following of people who really, really like the movie and they're avid fans of it and they're going to continue to say, oh, this is amazing. So, I mean, you think, if I understand correctly, that there is something about when this movie was released that added a unique perspective to either this genre or to the narrative in a way that maybe wasn't there before, and that created a whole new avenue of stories that didn't, let's just say, exist. For example, the Seven Samurai movie created a whole genre of types of movies after that, such as The Magnificent Seven and et cetera, that followed a same stereotypical journey or same did created some sort of thing in the narrative world or in that genre or whatever it was that continues to this day, right? That had some sort of cultural impact in that way that we continue to see the impacts of. Is that more or less what you're saying?
Well, I don't know if the timing is necessarily that important. I think it just takes an idea and does something different with it that when what was done prior, like, or is commonly done prior. So, and it does it effectively. So I don't know if like, I can't think of any of like ghost hunting movies or stories from before Ghostbusters. I'm sure there might be somewhere, like there probably is, but like this might be the first one where like they did it effectively and like captured the audience's attention and their like, I don't know, like their my brain is emptying right now.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it's unique compared to other ghost movies, right? Most ghost movies either lean hard into the horror genre, and so to see a ghost movie that's more silly without being Casper the Ghost, the friendly ghost, or something like that—that's a cartoon—is a unique take in some ways. Or like the fact that people are hunting them, like you said, that's unique.
No, I guess that's another thing. Like these ghosts aren't like they're not friendly. These ghosts are not like good guys or anything like that. They're like things to be hunted, and like they're still kind of scary in some regards, but they're not like. It's not treated like a horror creature. It's more like they're the target, like they're a pest to be exterminated.
So let me present my idea, and then we'll see what we're dealing with. I'm just gonna say it. I don't know why I'm overthinking this. I think when you think of Ghostbusters, you think of the characters, but then you also think of the iconic scene, right? And the iconic scene is the Marshmallow Man, right? like when people think of the Marshmallow Man and Ghostbusters, like those two things are synonymous in some ways. And it's like a absolutely absurd idea. And that was actually one of the very strong, that is one of the scenes that came from the very beginning, even when this was supposed to be like a more serious movie, according to my sources, which were Wikipedia, so you know, take that as you will. But there you go, guys. My secrets are revealed. Okay, I just need to say what's going on in my brain and then throw it out there. But the Ghostbusters has this Marshmallow Man scene, which is hilarious and has a lot iconic about it. And I think that's part of what makes it a cult classic is you have these very iconic scenes that won't be forgotten, right? In some ways, Star Wars has that same cult classic aspect to it because it has things like the very classic Luke, I am your father scene, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone knows Luke, I am your father because of how well that scene was done and how much that sticks in our mind, right? The strong metal hand of Darth Vader, you know, looking down at his son. And then, you know, in this one, you have the Marshmallow Man. In other scenes, you have other movies or other scenes in other movies, excuse me. But anyways, I think that there's something about the actual presentation that makes it they present something that's very unique. I also thought that the possession scene was pretty unique. Like, I thought I will probably think of that anytime I think of Ghostbusters in the future because because of how ridiculous that was. But maybe that's what goes for this X factor for movies is that they add these scenes that are so iconic that even if they don't necessarily make for a great story, they make for a memorable story. Right. Mm. And maybe that's maybe going more into the marketing of the movie where the movie has something that's so eye catching and memorable that you can't help but think about it when you think of the movie. Right. Mm-hmm. Or even you might make the case for the ugly green one that constantly shows up and just eats tons of food, right? Something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like those, yeah, the Slimer. He's also somewhat stereotypical for the movie. So for Ghostbusters. So there's things like that, right? That I think that's my argument for why this is a cult classic is that it has these iconic scenes that exist that are so almost absurd that, yes, I don't think it adds to the storyline in a compelling way, but it's so out there that it's memorable.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, here's the maybe response to what you said earlier, and then we'll see if you agree or disagree. But the, I think if you're dealing with a cult classic, something that the way you were describing it, if the value that it adds at its time is truly valuable, if it's more or less the way I'm going with this, if it's a valuable addition to its time that affects things after it, it's not going to stick around. It's going to be a cult classic for 20, 40, 60 years, maybe. And then after that, it's completely gone out of the cultural understanding. Mm-hmm. Versus something that would have more of a timeless value. And so I think that maybe a cult classic shouldn't have reoccurring viewers in the same way that something else would, that has a more memorable story.
Maybe. I mean, I'll admit, like, there is a clear difference between this and, like, your kind of run-of-the-mill, like, action movie or whatever, like, your run-of-the-mill, like, average story. So, I mean, there is definitely, like, and I would argue, and, like, I think there is something to be said about genre, where it's, like, how story is impacted by the genre it's trying, like, what its intention is. Like, with comedy, the intention isn't to make a great story, generally. It's supposed to be to make you laugh, to make something funny, or put things in a humorous light. Now, you can have themes and ideas and conflict. Like, you can have, like, these overarching messages in stories and such, like, even in comedies. Mm-hmm. But I feel, like, for some reason, I'm thinking of Tag right now, the movie Tag. I feel like there are some very strong, like, messages in there about friendship and, like, that kind of thing. But in growing up, like, it does, like, retaining those friendships as you get older. But, but Ghostbusters just have that, and so, like, maybe, and like, just trying to think this through, and I guess maybe there's something you said about iconic scenes, like the Marshmallow Man scene. So, and maybe that's it. I don't really know what else, like, because a cult class, like, this is one of those subjects, like, I kind of want to discuss more about, but it almost feels like it needs to be its own thing, like its own discussion, where it's like, diving deep into what makes a cult classic stand out from your other movies, like, because some of them aren't that great, like, story-wise, but they're really strong in other areas. And it's like, okay, like, why does this one stick around for as long as it, like, why has it stuck around so long? Why has it retained, like, the small segment of the population as an audience, as a fandom?
That could be an interesting discussion for sure. I do think, and I'd have to really sit down, maybe examine a couple more cult classics and really try to parse out what common threads exist between them and if that's in my mind justified. And you know, Patrick would be so interested in having that discussion, that cult classic lover that he is. So based on that, do you think you would change your rating?
Maybe drop it by 0.1, 0.2, like maybe 4.4, maybe. But even then, it's like, that's not something, like, and that's only because of the story. It doesn't actually change how much I like the movie. This is just like an evaluation of the story as itself. But because I do like this movie. I did enjoy it. I've seen it before, and I was happy to watch it again and review it. So it's just like, and I watch it again. Like, this is one of those movies, like, hey, there's a reason I watched the other Ghostbusters movies afterwards, because I liked this movie enough to watch the other ones.
I mean, I think you made some points at the beginning that lended credibility to, for example, the flaws of the main character that I didn't rate as highly as I would. So I'd be willing to probably bump my rating up to a 3 instead of a 2.5. So, you know, it's something. It's not nothing. That's a pretty significant bump for me, but I don't know that I'm a huge fan of this movie. There's a couple of scenes I definitely would watch again if I saw it on, but probably wouldn't stick in the room for the whole thing myself. Anyways, that being said, it is a comedy. Right. And at the end of the day, should comedies be rated differently? We'll have to see. Will we have a new rating system coming out for comedies compared to the other types of movies? Stay tuned. And that's all we got. We hope you all enjoyed. We will be back, as always, next week. See you all then.